and welcome to episode 24 of the Knitting Pretty podcast. It is October 23rd, 2014. Hi, my name is Em. If you haven't listened to the podcast and heard me say it 70 million times, you can find me on the internet as Knitfast Die Cozy, particularly Ravelry and Instagram, as well as Twitter and Pinterest. And you can find show notes for the podcast, as well as my blog and knitting patterns at emmaknits.net. There is a Facebook page, which I update with, you know, when the podcast comes out and stuff like that, as well as interesting things that cross my feed, at facebook.com/emmaknits. And then there is a Ravelry group, which you can find if you just search Knitting Pretty Podcast in the groups tab, and you should definitely join, because it's a good little group, and, you know, that's fun. There, it's where we'll be holding any giveaways, contests, all that good stuff, knit-alongs. So it's definitely a good thing to be part of if you want to join in on all of that. I hope to see you there. And feel free to chat, start threads, whatevs. I don't mind. It's your group too, right? So yeah, that out of the way. Welcome. Thank you for listening. Thank you for trying me out if you're a new listener. And for those of you who are returning, thank you for continually putting up with me. I very, very much appreciate it. I have a couple housekeeping things. One is I have enough testers now for the March hair, hat, and mitts patterns that will be coming out on November 1st. They're knit in Touring DK from Unwind Yarn Company. And if you happen to be living, you know, in the south of the states, Tennessee area, she's going to have kits at Fiber in the Borough, and you should totally pick one up. I would if it weren't my patterns and I didn't live a bajillion miles away. It's wonderful, wonderful yarn, and Dana is just so good at pairing yarn colors for the patterns, so I really think that her kits are going to be gorgeous. So check that out. Yeah, that's about it with the patterns. I wanted to say a belated happy Thanksgiving. I know I didn't record. Well, I did record last week, but the podcast was really short and it was kind of crappy and the timing was all bad and I had so much to do and it just kind of didn't work out. So I deleted that file and here we are again. So at that time, it had only just been Thanksgiving and I wanted to say I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving. And now it's a little late, but whatever. I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving, Canadians. And speaking of being Canadians, my heart goes out to those of you who are in Ottawa right now. Watching the news come in yesterday of the shooting, and everything was really hard as a Canadian, and I think as, you know, a citizen of the world, nobody thinks that this kind of thing is okay, but as a Canadian, it really hit me hard, and I hope that you guys in Ottawa are doing okay, and my heart goes out to the family of the soldier who was killed. And I just wanted to send hugs to all of my friends and listeners and their families who are in the military, because I'm such a pacifist and I feel weird about the military, but I know you guys as people and you're good people and you do good work and we need you. And I'm just heartbroken that this young man's life was taken. You know, like, he's younger than my little sister. So, yeah, just keep Ottawa in your thoughts right now, and hopefully this crap does not happen again. Ever, right? Canada? No more of this. Okay? Okay. So on that note, on to the knitting, because that's what you're here for. In my past, I have some finished things, and they are both very exciting finished things. The first thing I finished is my Sweet Georgia Yarns Merino Yak Fiber. They don't normally sell Merino Yak, like it's not on their website, but I got it at a show, so I don't know if it's a show special or, you know, just a one-off batch or whatever. But it was wonderful fiber, and if they do it again, you should buy some right away. The colorway was Tapestry, and I got, are you ready? 1,373 meters, or 1,502 yards of lace weight from the 200 grams I had. So that's kind of a heavy lace weight, which is perfect. Very luckily, that is just enough for the project I wanted it for. I don't often spin specifically for a pattern, but I was this time. I was spinning to make the Even Star Shawl by Susan Pandorf, and it requires 1450 to 1500 yards. So I'm just going to have to make sure my gauge is spot on and go from there. So if you want to see pictures of that gorgeous yarn, they're on my Instagram and on my Ravelry projects, which you should friend me on Ravelry. I'll friend you back. We'll friend each other. We'll be very friendly together. Yeah, it's pretty gorgeous. And so what I did with that, and I know that most of you have heard bits of that, of how I spun it, depending on when you were listening and stuff, but I wanted to explain how I did what I did with this yarn. So the tapestry colorway is hand painted. It's about, in the fiber, it was about 5 to 6 inch chunks of color. And what I wanted was a gradient, and I wanted it to be a two-ply lace weight. The reason I wanted it a two-ply is because a two-ply structure opens up really well in lace, and because I had a very intricate lace pattern planned for it, I wanted to get the best yarn for the pattern. So what I did, I had two braids of fiber. I took each one and tore it into chunks based on color. So I made piles. I had an olive green pile, and then I had a sort of golden green pile, and then I had a fuchsia pile, and a red pile, and a very dark purple pile. And then I divided each of those piles into two. And I did this really, really carefully, so they were accurate. I used my scale, I made sure that they were to the gram, the same amount. And then all I did from there was, that meant I had two piles of each pile. Separated those into the two plies. So one set of colors for one ply, one set of colors for the other ply, same colors. And then I just spun them. So I spun the first bobbin, green, gold, purple, red, purple, and then the other one, green, gold, purple, red, purple, and then I plied them together. And the thing about a gradient two ply like that is you actually do want the colors to not line up perfectly. Because if they line up perfectly, you'll get a solid line between your when the colors changes. If you were actually consistent enough in your spinning that you could spin 300 yards of one color from, say 13 grams of yarn, of fiber, and then you could spin 300 exactly the same yards from your other 13 grams of fiber. When those two lined up, that color would end at the exact same point on both plies, and that wouldn't give you a smooth gradient. So what you kind of want is sometimes for there to be a little bit of overlap. So the green overlaps into the gold on one ply, but then the gold overlaps onto the pink in the other ply, and so you get a smooth gradient. And you can help that by when you're breaking up your fiber to spin, if there's a bit of fiber that is, kind of where the dye has bled into the other colors, you can take those all off of your fiber and spin them in a little pile together as well, which means that you can get, the gold transitioning into the purple, particularly for me, because I wanted it to be a smooth transition. I pulled off all the little fluffs of fiber that were kind of gold and kind of purple, and I spun them all together at once. So I spun all the gold, all the sort of mixy bits, and then all the purple bits. And that gave a more smooth transition. So if you're interested in doing a gradient, but your fiber is not a gradient, that does not mean anything, and you are absolutely free to make a gradient. As far as plying and stuff, it would have been easier if I had been doing a Navajo or chain ply, but that would have created a three-ply yarn, which it would have been really hard to get the yarn weight that I needed. And also, the two-ply opens up really nicely. So that's how I spun it. I'd love to see other people's spinning versions of the same kind of thing. If you feel so inclined, post a picture. If you've done anything with gradient two plies, I'd love to see. I've also done it with there is a company on Etsy called Nuno Co. Nunoco, and they're in Wales, I think. They're in the UK, but I think they're in Wales specifically. And they do these really cute fiber packs where they sell you 10 color coordinated little bits of merino, each of them 10 grams. And so you can then spin them however you like. And I've done some very cool things with those, done some self-striping. But one of the other things I did was arrange them in a gradient fashion and then split them all in half and spin them into a two-ply again for a gradient. And it worked out really cute. So there's lots of ways to approach the idea of a two-ply gradient, and it's worth trying. It's really fun. And it requires less spinning of singles for the same weight of yarn than a three-ply, so that's fun too. The other thing I finished was my Tan House Brook Shawl, which is a pattern by Jennifer Lassonde of the Downseller Studio podcast. And the yarn I used was Color Mart Yarns, which is a website that sells, what's the word? My brain is thinking second cuts, but that would be fleece. I mean, I don't know, just seconds. Leftovers from the garment making industry, and specifically from like high-end designer garments. So they sell yarn on the cone, and that yarn had been used for machine making fancy clothes. And the yarn I used was a cashmere silk merino blend at 35% cashmere, 35% silk, and 30% merino. It was labeled as a DK, but realistically it was far more like a fingering weight. I had a large quantity of it. I had 150 grams, which I used about 90% of that, so about 450-ish yards. And the shawl pattern doesn't call for quite that much yardage, so it is smaller. I made it larger. The first way I made it larger was just kind of in the first section where it's just a stockinette shawl. I just increased until I kind of felt done with it. And then when I was doing the textured bit at the end, I added to the garter stitch segments at the end, just basically knit until I was frustrated with how long the rows were getting. And they were well over 300 stitches by the end, and I was just done. You know how you get like that with a shawl? You're just like, it's great, I want to use up all of my yarn, it's going so well, and then suddenly you're just like, no, there will be no more stitches knit on this thing. I am done with the stitches. And that's what stage I got to, where I was done. Just done. So the shawl came out beautifully. It really is gorgeous. I made, as well as making it larger, and partly because I made it larger, my stitch counts kept getting off. And this is no fault of the pattern, it's just me not paying attention. So there are actually errors in my shawl. The most egregious being that the textured segment on one side doesn't line up the way it should. Instead of being staggered, they're sort of lined up and whatever. No one's gonna notice. It doesn't matter that much. But it turned out beautifully. The yarn is super, super soft and drapey. It's softer than cotton. There's no itch to it whatsoever. And it's really drapey and heavy from the silk. The needle size suggested for the pattern was, I believe, a US size 7, which is a 4.5 millimeter, I think. Maybe. Anyway. I ended up going down a needle size even from that. Even though I was working on a heavier yarn and all that, I went down a needle size from the fingering weight needle suggestion because this yarn just draped so much that it was just stretching out and it needed to be at a tighter gauge. In the end, I'm very glad I went with that, even though it meant that knitting to the size of shawl I wanted took longer. The drape on this thing is spectacular. It's so nice and it's heavy and it's just really pretty. I got quite tired of knitting with the yarn because it was quite splitty. Because it was a cable plied, it was three plies that had then been cabled together. Three sets of three plies, so it was like a nine ply. And when you get that many plies, particularly in the cabling structure, and then add in the fact that it was silk and silk doesn't sproing the way wool does, it was just really splitty, and I was tired of that. But I'm still really glad I used the yarn for this shawl. It's a lovely sort of purpley navy blue color. And unfortunately, that's not really a color I wear. I put a picture of it on Instagram wearing the shawl, and it looks fantastic. And I like how it looks. Maybe not with the shirt I'm wearing because it's a little bit obnoxious, but I like how it looks. But I just don't wear navy that often. I tend to wear brighter colors around my face. So I'm thinking of giving the shawl to my sister. Not for any special occasion, just because she has, modeled for me in so many knitting patterns So many patterns. The cute one, yeah, that's my sister. And also she gave me all her free produce from her tasty garden, so I think I'll give that to her. And there's no point in keeping FOs that you're never gonna wear, so pass that one on, and she can enjoy it because she wears neutrals like a boss. I am jealous of her neutral wearing abilities. Like, she can pull off like grays and beiges and tans and taupes, and they look fabulous on her. When I put on taupe, I just feel kind of bleh. So I figure the navy will go well with her. On to my present. I have worked on a bunch of stuff for the past 2 weeks. I cast on the front of the Hugo sweater by Veronica Avery yesterday. I had finished the back a while ago and then just kind of stalled out on the sweater. I didn't feel like it. But it's for my husband, and I'd like to have it done before Christmas. I cast on the front yesterday, and I'm already about 5 inches into it, which reminded me that a sweater in worsted weight for a very skinny husband goes at an incredible rate, and why don't I just keep on knitting it so it's done? Anyway, I'm knitting it out of Brooklyn Tweed Shelter in the button jar colorway, which is lovely. So, more progress on that to come because I want it done. Another thing is I picked up my Leftovers cowl by Wendy D. Johnson. I started this ages ago, and it's the intention is that it's a long-term project. It just sits by my bed. But I haven't picked it up in ages, so I thought I would let you know that yes, I am still working on it. No, I've made almost no progress. Yes, it's still very tiny. And yes, it will take me like 20 years to finish it. But I did work on it, and it was nice. Because it's a color work cowl, and it's huge. It's very, very wide, and it's done in a tube which you then graft together. And it's just enormous. It's an enormous, enormous piece of knitting. And because it's color work, I don't often feel like working on it for long periods of time because I have to look at charts and stuff, and I'd much rather something I can memorize. But every once in a while, I just get that color work urge, and so I'm trying to channel that urge into actually working on this cowl rather than not. And I think it's gonna look so good. I just want it done, but it's never gonna be done. But whatever. Anyway, I said a while ago that I wouldn't talk about it unless anything happened, and probably nothing exciting is gonna happen for some time. So just know that it's in there, in the background, working hard, trying to be a cowl one day. I cast on something new. I cast on some socks out of some hand spun. The yarn is from fiber dyed by Humming Bee Farm, who is a local farmer and dyer here. And the wool is Perendale, and I don't believe they're her sheep. She does do stuff with fiber from her animals, but they are mostly Angora goats, I believe, so mostly the mohair. Maybe a llama? I don't know. Anyway. She brings in really great fibers. She gets lots of different breeds. She does Romney blends and the usual Merino and Polworth and all that good stuff. But I like to go with the different wools from her. So, yeah, the wool is Perendale, which is it kind of feels sort of long woolish, but it's not terribly scratchy and it's also not too long. And I think it'll be durable enough for socks, provided I'm kind to them. The colorway was two. It was two different colorways. One was called Electric Limes, and the other one was called Lettuce and Eggplant and Lemons or something. Anyway, it's neon green and other neon turquoisey green and yellow and purple, kind of all plied in together. It looks fantastic. It's very green. So the pattern I'm doing them cuff down and. I'm not really following a pattern except for the gusset. There's a pattern that just came out called Basic Sock with a Double Gusset Heel by Christy H. Payne, Payne. And I like the look of the double gusset heel, which is done on the bottom of the foot. And so I'm gonna do that. And the rest of it, I'm just kind of knitting a sock. I don't need a pattern for a sock. But I just think this gusset, it looks like it really hugs the arch of your foot. And so I'm curious to see how that goes. Some other new things that I'm working on. I have started spinning some Southdown crossed with Suffolk Roving, also from Humming Bee Farms. And it's in two different colorways that were unnamed. They're both really, really dark. Lots of black and black blending with other colors. And I've just, because I'm going to do a Navajo plied sport weight sock yarn out of them. So I just sort of pulled off a foot of one roving and then a foot of another and stacked it all up. So I'm working with a little bit of one and then a little bit of the other to keep the colors together or separate or striping or whatever. Anyway, I'm Navajo plying it when I get there. But one of the braids was black and purple and brown and sort of rust color, but mostly black. And then the other one was mostly black with green and turquoise, really bright pops of turquoise. So those are going to be socks for my sister, and it's her Christmas present. And I didn't give a warning, not that she's listening to the podcast, but I didn't give a warning because she already knows. She picked out the colors for herself, and yeah, so hopefully that gets done soon so I can start knitting because, yeah, Christmas knitting, it's coming up. And the other thing I started spinning was some cotton on the charka. I took some time and sat down and figured out how my charka actually worked because I'd never used it before. It had just sat on a shelf since last March, February, spring sometime. And yeah, it turns out it didn't work quite the way I thought it did. There were some parts that I was putting in the wrong place when I first just set it up to see if it worked. And now it's a much more pleasant machine to work with because I'm actually using it properly. Makes a big difference, you know, using things properly. And the cotton, it came with the charka. And did I tell you how I got this charka? I traded it at my last festival that I did as a vendor of yarn. One of the other vendors there had a yarn shop and was selling off the last of her stuff and had this charka. And a charka is an Indian spinning wheel. It's a spindle wheel, kind of like a great wheel, except this one is teeny tiny. It's shaped like a book and it folds out flat on the floor. You spin with it while sitting cross-legged. And I'll tell you more about charkas later, but later, like not today. But she had this charka, and I asked her how much it was because I was just kind of curious. I'd been really wanting one, but you know, it wasn't like a fancy high quality one like the one that Bosworth does. There's some expensive ones that are very nice, and then this one is kind of a cheap one, but made in India. It works, it does the trick. I mean, I like it. Anyway, I asked her how much it was, and she said she'd give it to me for $100, and she said she'd give it to me for $100 in trades, which means like less than that because, you know, the yarn costs the dyer less than anyway. So I kind of like jumped at that chance and ran away with my new charka as fast as I could to make sure she didn't change her mind. I was so excited. And so yes, it was the best trade I ever made. And she also gave me the cotton to try it with. And the cotton, the put up, or the put up, the cotton is in puni form. If you haven't spun with punis before, they are like roll eggs in that they are a tubular carded preparation, but punis are packed much tighter than roll eggs. They are the traditional Indian preparation for spinning on a charka, for spinning cotton. And yeah, they're very dense little noodles of cotton that is in a carded kind of preparation. And I love spinning from these. Like, I've spun with roll eggs before, both real ones made on hand cards and ones made on a blending board or a drum carder. You can, it's kind of cheating, but it works great anyway, so I don't care. And they're lovely. But the punis are amazing. You just spin off the end of these things, and I mean, the cool thing about the charka is that it's the first time I've ever had to spin completely unsupported long draw. One of your hands is busy driving the wheel, so you can't do a supported long draw with them because you simply do not, unless you have three arms, in which case, you know, whatever, that's your choice. But I do not, and so you can't do any sort of supported spinning, and it makes it all that much more complicated, but also really rewarding because long draw is like magic. So yay that. I've only spun a little bit. It's slow going because I'm still learning how to use it and how to do all the things, but I really like it. And that's for the New to You spin along, which is going along in the podcast group on Ravelry for the Yarn Raising podcast with Malia. And if you spin, or if you don't spin, you should join that spin along, because if you don't spin, everything's new to you, and whatever you do, qualifies you for prizes. And if you do spin, it's always good to get more experience, right? So, new to you. Go do the thing. In my future, there's a couple things. One, I'm just really, really wanting a long cardigan. One of the girls that I was hanging out with over the past weekend had this amazing, beautiful, long cardigan knit in Lopi. And not everyone likes Lopi, but I do. And it was just super inspiring, and I wanted it. I'd had a colorwork yoke in a traditional Lopi style, but other than that, it was a cardigan, it was long. Oh, it was so cute. I really liked it. So I really want a long cardigan. I have a sweater quantity for a long vest queued, but I don't know if that'll actually satisfy my long cardigan need. I don't know. We'll just have to see. I might see if I can transfer that sweater quantity into a long cardigan instead, because the vest is very, very, very heavily cabled, which uses up more yarn, and maybe there's enough yarn for something with sleeves. Don't know. We'll see. The other thing in my future that I queued is a new pattern by Josh Ricks. Rikes? Ricks? I'm sorry, Josh. I'm kind of hopeless. Anyway, I think it's Ricks. It is called Fatal Wound. And it's a shawl, which is both color blocked and striped. It's done in three colors, and it's super cool, guys. You have to go look at the shawl pattern. It's really, really great. First of all, the way with the colors that he's done it in, completely unisex. And like, I mean, unisex, providing that the man in question will wear a shawl. My husband wouldn't, but he's silly. So, unisex within reason. But once you establish that men can in fact wear shawls and look awesome in them, totally unisex. It is also kind of a concept pattern, and I really like those. It's a pattern that is deeply inspired by something and reflects that really well. So it is inspired by Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, and it has lots of little nods in it to the story of Caesar and the death of Caesar, and it's got lines in it for the stab wounds and red sort of dagger shapes, and oh, it's so cool. I fear how many ends you would have to weave in, because it looks like a lot, but I think it's worth it. Weaving in ends is not so bad, and once it's done, and you don't have to do it again. So go check it out. It's super cool. And Josh, well, let's just leave your last name out so I don't butcher it again. Josh does a lot of really cool patterns that are geometric and graphic and stripey and like cool uses of increases and decreases and color blocking. So if you're into that, go check his stuff out. He's got it down. On to the show and tell segment. I wanted to talk a little bit about a knitting retreat, because my knitting group had a retreat just this past weekend, and it was really great. It's the third year that we've done it, and it's just awesome. So I wanted to talk about it and share some details with you guys, and maybe encourage you to try organizing your own retreat. So there are retreats, and then there are retreats. Some major retreats, things like SSK, or the Into the Wool retreat that the Just One More Row podcast is connected to, or the Pipeliner retreats that the Paula of the Knitting Pipeline does. That's one kind of retreat, where it's a retreat that is drawing people from all over into one location for, a super duper fun extravaganza with classes and teachers and all sorts of cool stuff like that, a market. That is one kind of retreat, and that is super cool, and I would love to go to one of them. SSK is like my dream vacation. It's never going to happen because it's a bajillion miles away, but I can dream. And then there are retreats like this one. And this is a retreat that our knitting group had. And I mean, we have quite a large knitting group, so it was easier. But one of our girls, thank you so much, by the way. Thank you so much, put in a lot of work to organize this, and basically we all rented a vacation home together over the course of a weekend. And this home is amazing. Like, if people live in houses like this, they must, I just hope they're grateful, because it's this huge log cabin style house built up on kind of a cliff face out in the woods, and it's got this enormous fireplace up the center of the house that, and I'm like, enormous. It's bigger than my daughter's bedroom. Enormous. It's just a beautiful, beautiful house. But between, I think there were 14 of us who did the overnight retreat stay this time. Totally reasonable. Totally reasonable. And then we also had drop-ins, and that's another way to split up the cost. One on the Saturday, we had people come in just for the day and, you know, pay a small fee for that, just for helping offset the cost of the space. And just if you have people in your, you know, a local knitting group, or you think there's enough people in your local area who'd be interested in doing something like this, it's not that expensive. Like, I would have thought, you know, having not done it, that it would be insanely expensive to do this, but it was cheaper for me to have a bed in this house full of people than it would have been to stay in a crappy hotel for 2 nights. So, vacation homes are where it's at. One thing, though, that we have learned over time is that getting deposits from people, non-refundable deposits, are it's key. You have to do it, because otherwise people back out, or, you know, when they can't come at the last minute and can't fill their space, the person who's organizing ends up being stiffed for a bunch of money. That's not really cool at all. So yeah, make sure that you get deposits when you're from each of your retreat attendees. That's my main suggestion, just to make the money thing work out properly. And then the thing that we always have done for 3 years now is a massive potluck. And so we're a group of people who like to cook and like to show off that we know how to cook. And so the food is spectacular, like unbelievably delicious. And the potlucks is just, it's the highlight of the thing, you know. Everybody brings the most amazing food, and I way overate. Like, I was full the next morning, because I just, everyone was so good at cooking, and I just wanted to have a little bit of everything, but even a little bit of everything made the fullest plate ever. Another thing that we did in the first 2 years of the retreat was a yarn swap slash destash thing. We didn't do it this time, it just didn't, there wasn't enough interest, but it was very cool. Just people bring what they have from their stashes that they don't necessarily want to hold on to any longer, and price them, and then you can trade or buy or whatever. At the second year, I did a little mini trunk show from my yarn shop. So if you have a local dyer, it's the sort of thing that you could invite them to, and, you know, again, have some fun doing some yarn shopping. I would suggest, if you are planning doing a retreat like this, make sure that you bring lots of coffee, lots of alcohol, a swift, and a ball binder. Those are the main things you need, and beyond that, it's just, you know, hang out in front of the fire and knit and chat. We had a couple of girls this year who have young babies, and it worked out great. The babies were there, and they were adorable, and it didn't cramp the style of the retreat at all. We all still misbehaved as much as we ever would have. It's just there were also babies there, and it helped that the like that the home that we were renting had several floors, and so that when the babies needed to go down for a nap, there were quiet places to tuck them away. But yeah, I just really think that if you have a group of knitting friends and it at all appeals to you, check out doing something like a weekend retreat. It's like doing a girls' weekend, but better, because it's a knitting retreat. Right? So, thank you so much to my friends who organized this, and for all that you have done with that, because it was so much fun, and it was so recharging and relaxing, even though I was totally exhausted by the end, mostly because I'm a super duper introvert and being around people, that many people for 3 days is, it's a little much for me. But it's okay, I got over it. And it's so worth it and so fun. And if you have never attended something like that, consider it. It's a great way to get to know people better, and to just share your love of knitting and wine, mostly wine, a lot of that. So, yeah, retreat, you should do it, okay? Consider it at least. On to my weekly obsessions. The first is a recipe that I think everyone should know about. It's called Vegetarian West African Peanut Soup, and it's on a cooking blog called cookieandkate.com. And everything that I mentioned will be linked in the show notes, so go there for that. But it's just this amazing, amazing recipe that sounds kind of gross when you think like peanut butter. Like, it's a soup that includes peanut butter. And, my first reaction was kind of ew. But it's so good. It's the simplest recipe ever. It takes very little time to make. I extend the time it takes to make by adding some sweet potato to it just to give it a little more oomph. But even then, it's only onions and garlic and ginger and sweet potato stock, peanut butter, collard greens or kale, and tomato paste and sriracha. So easy to make, and it's like spicy and peanutty and delicious. If you've ever had like spicy peanut noodles or anything, it's that kind of delicious peanut flavor with the spicy and the amazing, but as a soup, and you serve it over rice, and oh, so good. It's also fairly cheap to make, depending on the price of kale and or collards in your area. It's healthy, it's vegetarian, you can make it totally vegan. I have made it with meat before. I put chicken in it once, and it didn't improve the recipe at all. So it was good. It was really good, but it didn't improve the recipe. So I've left it out from this point onwards, because what's the point? And, having at least one day a week of eating vegetarian is a great way of cutting down on your food costs, as well as cutting down on the impact of, that industrial meat production has on the world. So check it out. Super tasty recipe, and it's very hearty and filling, and my daughter really likes it. I serve hers before I put the spice into the soup, which means that, hers isn't spicy, but she totally loves it. And she's kind of fussy. Well, no, she's not. She used to be kind of fussy, and I'm still holding on to the idea of her being this really picky eater, when in fact she's totally not. Yeah, try it, okay? And the collard greens really are better than the kale just for texture, but the kale is a totally, totally acceptable substitute if collards aren't available where you are. And they aren't from most of my grocery stores, or they're like $5 for a bunch of saggy leaves, and no. Thanks. No. I also did it once with some mustard greens because I had them, mustard greens and kale, and that was also good. So, your options are endless, pretty much. My second obsession is a new pattern from Colette Patterns. It's called Dahlia. It is a sewing pattern. Colette is a really excellent sewing pattern designing company, indie company. And Dahlia is this really cute dress. It is with or without sleeves. It has an inset waist yoke, so the bodice is gathered, and then there's a yoke, or it's a band of fabric that goes around your middle right at the waist, and then the skirt comes out from underneath there. So it's very feminine, basically. It means that it's broken up into blocks, and you could color block it to draw more attention to a waist. If you have a tiny waist and you want to show it off, which if I had a tiny waist, I'd be showing that thing off all the time. You could do it in a different color. If you don't have that tiny of a waist, excuse me. If you don't have that tiny of a waist, you could still super much like make it look tiny and show it off in this dress. So that's cool. It's got raglan sleeves, which are comfy, lots of room to move. perfect for, a warm winter dress where you just want to be cozy but also be pretty. That raglan sleeves are good for that. And also they fit in with the kind of sporty thing that's going on. You could color block the sleeves, which is another way to play with the pattern and change it up for yourself. It has Colette's new extended sizing. Their old patterns, the sizing does not fit me. And I don't tend to buy patterns that aren't sized up to my size because I don't feel particularly in the mood to support people who aren't taking care of me too. If they're going to leave me out of their patterns, I don't need to buy them. But Colette has started doing really good extended sizing. This goes up to a 26, and it's not like a 26, like a Buttrick 26, which is not a clothing store 26. It's actually a pretty standard clothing store size 26. Also, it doesn't have any facings. The neck is finished, and if you do it without sleeves, the little straps are finished with bias tape, which facings have a time and a place, and that time and place is not with me. I hate facings. I hate doing them. I hate wearing them. I hate ironing them. Mostly, I hate ironing them. I still do them. Sometimes you just need a facing. Sometimes certain necklines have to have a facing. But they've made it so this dress doesn't, and that is awesome. So, excuse me, voice going away. Should finish soon, I guess. So I really want to do some fall sewing. I have fabric to do a Colette Manita dress, and now I want to get fabric to do this Dahlia dress too, because it's so pretty. So yeah, maybe there will be one of those in my future. Who knows? My third obsession is I have to make my daughter a Cheshire Cat costume for Halloween, because that is what she wants to be, and I think that's an awesome thing to want to be for Halloween. But that means I have to make one because it's not like they sell Cheshire Cat costumes at Costco. So, yay that. I'm not really sure. It'll be like the Cheshire Cat from the Disney movie, as opposed to a more cat-like Cheshire Cat. She asked me, actually, she said it needs to have a tail and ears and eyes and pink and purple stripes and a button to make me disappear. So I have told her that buttons that make you disappear aren't really an option in the real world, but beyond that, I want to fulfill all the other things. So I think I'm going to get some fleece and make kind of a onesie thing for her. That's kind of baggy and make a big baggy stuffed tail and a hood on it with ears, and then we'll just paint her face. Although I did a cute thing last year. She wanted to be Pete the Cat for Halloween, and if you haven't read the Pete the Cat books and you happen to have small children anywhere in your life, you should be buying the Pete the Cat, at least the first one, the Rockin' My White Shoes one. Because or new shoes, whatever, the one about shoes. So cute. Pete the Cat's pretty chill. Anyway, her Pete the Cat costume, I actually put the eyes of the character on the hood so that when she pulled it down, she could just be Pete. It was like a mask almost. But I don't know if I'll do that with this one. We'll see. I don't know. It means I have to go to the fabric store to get a bunch of fleece, which means I could also pick up some fabric to make that Dahlia dress. Just saying. Be pretty cool. So anyway, there will be sewing soon, I guess. And that is that for the podcast. So I hope you have an awesome week. I will talk to you again next week. Happy knitting, happy sewing, happy other crafting, and happy hanging out with the people you love.